But it's the best deal in town if you're getting started. It really is. It's just it's one of the gifts that I like, really pivotal gifts that has shaped my whole world, really. I was just thinking about, you know, what a deadly disease this is and how many people it takes on a regular basis. And I'm on the firing line a lot because I work with a lot of newcomers. And just in the last week, one of my dear, dear friends lost their best friend, 40 years old, to this disease. It's just such a shame. We're such good people, you know, and just have this terrible, terrible disease. Another young friend lost her mom. So, you know, I feel like I've earned my seat here. I came from a long lineage of addicts and alcoholics. Work hard, play hard mentality. My grandfather had a concrete business in San Francisco, and my mom had five brothers. They all worked for the concrete business, when my mom was little, I mean, there was just a lot going on, and there's four of us in my family. I have an older brother and an older sister, 13 years older and 12 and 11 years older. We have the same parents, but there was a big gap in between. And it's like they had a totally different childhood than we did, my younger brother and I. When I think back on getting, you know, when it all began, my mom thought that Oakland was our problem. There was a lot of domestic violence going on. My older brother was getting arrested all the time. I was grateful when he was arrested because I knew that he would be safe. I was like the middle, so I was always kind of defending and kind of waiting for making space for him so he could get away. And my sister had a baby every year for like 4 years in a row, and it was just a lot. My sponsor likes to joke around that I was like a five-year-old with a caseload. You know, I really, really was. I mean, it was like no joke, you know. I mean, I think that I had the allergy to deeply caring for my people. I just cared about them. And I worried about him a lot. And so that was my first addiction, really, was how everybody was doing, you know? Nobody assigned me that job. That was just a job that I took on. My mom thought that Oakland was our problem, so she moved us to Walnut Creek. We moved there with us, you know? It's like, there was just a lot going on. I had a big chip on my shoulder. And I thought that everybody in Walnut Creek was pretty white bread, and I just didn't feel like I fit in there at all. I remember smoking my first joint at 8 years old. I mean, it was, everybody was doing it around me, my older brother, my older sister, and it was just like I always felt older than I was. I went from there. I always had the work thing going on. I did well in school. I was a gymnast and a diver, and I really kind of loved that. But definitely, I had the allergy right from the beginning. I was never a moderate tempered person. When I liked something, I liked it a lot. And, you know, I just did. And, I always overshot the mark. I was never mildly intoxicated. I was always insanely drunk right from the beginning. I think about it as like, it took a couple of years. I really didn't black out. And I didn't hear about blacking out until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I was, you know, I was in really dangerous situations on a regular basis. And I don't know where that came from. I would just start off in Walnut Creek and then end up in Oakland and San Francisco. Driving, I mean, back then, you guys, it was like, they didn't even, it just, yeah, I remember staying in the third lane. I could get all the way home from San Francisco in the third lane, you know, rolling the window up, I mean, down to get some air. And I'd stop at Sam Woo's to get some food at like 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, with my friends passed out in the car. And I, you know, I just, it went like that. It was fun. And then it was fun with problems, and then it was problems. It was 6 years of drugs and alcohol for me, and it just brought me to my knees, absolutely, in every way. I had a dear friend. We worked at this local little shoe store down in Walnut Creek. Our boss was like our dad. And a couple of my friends, you know, they made me look good. You know, they were way more sloppy than me. And one of them, she and I worked together for 6 years, and she disappeared for like a couple of months. I want to say like 3 or 4 months. And I ran into her in San Francisco, and something about her was just so different. And I was like, oh my God, Mary, do you have a new boyfriend? And she said, no, I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just getting out of treatment. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. You know, I just felt like it was like awful. I mean, I just, but you know, here at, I'm at this time, I'm driving up to Mount Diablo every night, you know, with my younger brother, getting stoned, listening to, you know, Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here, you know, and I was the lost soul swimming in a fishbowl year after year, you know, and things aren't working anymore. And and my friend, she was on the big recruit, you know. She thought all of her friends needed AA. And I'm 19 years old, and I go to a meeting with her in San Anselmo. And it was a Tuesday night. It was big book study. There was a famous rock and roll singer from the 60s there. And she cussed like a sailor, and she talked about, like, she was really old. She was, like, 35 or something. And she was married to, like, this 24-year-old or something. And there were, you know, this is in, like, 84, 1984. It's, there were no young people's meetings back then. But there were, it was a busy room, like, tonight. And I was blown away by the honesty that people shared about. It blew my mind. And I wanted what you guys had. My friend also moved me in. She hadn't gone to Al-Anon yet. So she moved me in with her, and then I became like her project, you know? I was going to meetings like every day, riding our bikes. We were riding our bikes to meetings, the people were just so friendly. I didn't do some critical things. I really don't like to be told what to do. So I didn't get a sponsor because, like, I mean, I read the steps, and I think that I did them pretty good in my mind. And I didn't get a service commitment because I really don't like to work for free. And then lo and behold, I walk in on the same party I had walked out on 5 months earlier. But now I'm armed with the knowledge of my condition. And that's the kind of time that next 3 years, 2.5 years was, I just never, the incomprehensible demoralization, all my friends were in college, and I frequented a lot of colleges. I never ever applied for a class or anything. And, you know, I was coming to in the worst of the worst places, and it was just getting dangerouser and dangerouser. I just, it was really scary. And I, you know, when I came back, I just was ready for something different, you know? I was just ready. I was just so done. And I went to a CA meeting. Was my first meeting. It was at the Walnut Creek Hospital next to John Muir. That was an oldie but a goodie place. And they were nice to me. And I went to the AA meeting the next night at St. Tim's. And I would practice reading how it worked. and the promises. I love the promises. I was just terrified. I felt like if I opened my mouth, I would cry for months. And people just loved me. You know, they remembered my name. Somebody told me that the people that make it end up good get in the middle. They get into service. And so I did it different. I got a sponsor. I picked her because she was a bodybuilder by night and a court reporter by day. And she was all tattied up, and it was way before it was popular, you know, for girls to have tattoos. And I just thought she was the coolest. And she had five sisters that were in NA and AA. So, and I just wanted what she had, you know. And so I started doing what she did. She got me really involved in service. I'm not a joiner. I hate to join. But I just started following around and saying yes. If you're lucky enough to dive in and say yes to everything, amazing things can happen. Amazing. You know, I was working at a bar. My friend's dad owned a bar in downtown Walnut Creek, and I was swinging trays at night, and then I started hand-painting clothing. And somebody saw my work and asked if I wanted to move to Cabo San Lucas, Mexico. And my sponsor at the time said that I would probably relapse because beers were like 70, Tecate beer was like 80 cents or something, I don't know. It was like really, really cheap, you know? And so I went to Mexico, and I went there in April, and went to this Hacienda Hotel where somebody told me that there were people, these guys that worked there that knew where the meetings were. There was no meeting schedule, and there was no smartphones back then. There were pagers, and so they took me to my first. They told me to meet him at the water taxi or the taxis, and we started. I'm brand new in Cabo. I've never been there before, and these two guys start taking me out of town in this big van, and so we get out 3/4 of the way, and there's a thatched roof hut with pet dogs with patches of fur missing. And I knew that I was in the right place because there was a picture of Dr. Bob and Bill W. on the wall. And it was like, thank God, you know? And they were so gracious and so lovely. And, you know, I just started, they told me where the English-speaking meetings were because nobody else knew. And so I became the secretary, the treasurer, and the greeter of 3 meetings a week in Cabo for the next couple of years. One of the most important things was I got a sponsor when I was there. And I picked this woman because I moved. I'm 22 years old, and I moved there all by myself. And I was really interested in developing this relationship with the higher power. I had no concept of a higher power, but I started really taking that to heart, and I was journaling every day and just writing to my higher power. And, you know, I moved to this place where people were always leaving, and I had this terrible fear of people leaving, you know, and I moved to this place where people were visiting and gone on a regular basis. But I really started to develop a relationship with this power greater than myself. No concept. It was more of an energy than anything. And the more involved that I got in the rooms, the more deeply I felt that I was being guided. And meaningful synchronistic things started to happen. Like before I left, I was working the fifth step with my sponsor, and we were in Tilden Park, and one of the things that I used to do was go to Tilden Park and do a lot of drugs, and then dance to the Tubes' Attack of the 50-Foot Woman, you know? And it was probably way before your guys' time, but I'm telling her about going on one of these excursions and how I lost my shoe. And we're talking and walking, and through, it was November. I got sober in the fall, And all of a sudden I kick up a shoe and it's my shoe, you guys. And it was like, are you joking me? I mean, things like that were so specific to me started to happen. And that were just like, what is going on? So when I moved to Mexico, I picked this woman to be my sponsor. She lived in Todos Santos, about 50 miles. So just to get to her house, I had to take a bus, and with chickens on the bus and those patch dogs. And I get to her house, and she'd be like, what do you think of my house, Christy? And I'm like, gosh, Teresa, it's amazing. And she's like, yeah, God gave me this house. And I'm like, really? I'm like, that's the trip, you know? And I was just like, but she started talking like this about her higher power. Like, they were taking care of her mother, and the mother was disabled. And then she was saying, well, you know, what do you think? You know, we just got this van. It's pretty amazing. I'm like, yeah, it's awesome. She's like, yeah, God gave us this van for my mom, so to be able to transport her around. And I just remember just being blown away. You know, I couldn't even imagine having that kind of relationship, but with something greater than myself. But I just got really involved. And one of the things that we started doing was there was no detox in Cabo. So we had to take people out to La Paz, which was like a 170-mile drive. And I just got in the middle, you know. We started doing that. We started loading up people. One of my friends had a car that was, you know, they looked horrible and dusty, but they ran well. And just, you know, we'd load up a bunch of people and drive to La Paz and drop people off at this detox. And I don't know, but I was so jaded by a lot of domestic violence, a lot of craziness in my family, and I loved my people, but I started to be healed from the inside out. You know, really gradually, it just started to change me. I moved home from Mexico after a couple of years, and you know, it really changed my sobriety. I mean, I just kind of dove in and got into the middle, and I came home and I had my son. This was a week before I had him in a C-section. I had come back and I got right involved at the meetings, and I was ready to pop, and I have my son. It was like the little baby Jesus being born. You know, all the people in AA were like lined up to see this baby. And then we get out. The day that we got out of the hospital was the Loma Prieta earthquake. So I had like PTSD from, you know, feeling like our house was going to fall down. And but again, you know, these magical things were happening. Like because of the steps, because of the traditions, because of the concepts, the one person that was on my fifth step and was high on the list was my mom. And just healing power started happening between my mother and I. And when my son was born, it was like a whole new lease on life for us. I mean, it really, she was such a good grandmother. She drank on a regular basis, but she really rose to the occasion with my son. And I just feel like, you know, how do you pay back a place that gave you your whole life, really? I mean, I can't do enough service. I can't do enough, you know. One of my friends told me that, if you want to be a good example, you know, you don't raise your kids, you show them how to live. And so I really wanted my son to go to school, one of my friends said, well, you should go to school. One of my adopted fathers in AA, there were so many, you know, but I was like, I don't even know how to apply. And, you know, it was people in the rooms that showed me, that walked me up. I'm like, I applied for scholarships. And, you know, at that time, my husband It was the Oakland fires, and he fell off a roof and got caught by his tool belt. And we had this opportunity. It was crazy, but he needed to go to school too to be retrained for something. And so I called my dad, and he moved us up to one of his houses in Sonora. And we go to Sonora. Within a week, we're secretary, treasurers, in the middle. I got a couple of sponsees. My son's like 4 years old, and he's like, "We go to school, right, Mom?" And I'm like, "Yeah, we go to school," it was the people in the rooms. They got me one of my longtimer friends. He was 12-step by Chuck Chamberlain, and he was sober for a really long time. He got me involved in public information at the professional level. I was like, "I don't want to do that." And he's like, "Christy, there's nobody up here that can do it, and it's really important that we get the word out about Alcoholics Anonymous everywhere." And I just started doing these things that I didn't really want to do. But when I was leaving, I always felt like, God, something's happening. I mean, I'm just changing. Something is bigger than me is happening here. And I just felt so privileged because I got to, there's something about the remembering. There's something so powerful about the remembering, because if I forget who I am and where I came from, I'm doomed to repeat it. I just am doomed to repeat it. And I've watched it over and over and over again. It was the people in the rooms that showed up for me even more than my family. My dad really, I was the first of his six kids to graduate from college, and he didn't come to my graduation. But everybody in AA, there were like 50 people there, and we make up for it, we make up for it like a thousandfold. And, I never planned on going to school as long as I did. My boyfriend / husband now for many, many years, he said, "You know what, Christy, you should do something with that cleaning disorder you have." And I was like, because things were so crazy that my mom would make a joke that she'd get up in the middle of the night and I'd make her bed when I was like 4 years old, And so I started this housekeeping business to get through school. And my sponsor's son was in this Buddhist school. It's like a Sufi school. And I really wanted my son to go to that school. And, I was able to not only afford my education by cleaning houses, but I also helped to put him through that. He was on a wait list for like 2 years for that school. But, it's the people in the rooms. Again, when I was drinking and using, I would come to in Kaiser, in the hospital, with getting stitches, getting my stomach pumped, doing just crazy schemes of whatever I was doing. And one by one, after 9 years, I went to school full time for 9 years, got my master's, and passed my even before I passed the license, I did an informational interview with this woman, and she described her job, and I thought, I'm gonna do her job, but I'm gonna do it where I grew up. And this is 6 years before I got that job, you guys. And by the grace of God, I've been in that hospital for, this is my 24th year. And I get to work with pregnant women that are at risk for substance abuse and mental health issues. And how do you get from there, from where I came from, to where, it's like, what, how does that happen? And it's just, my son hasn't had to see his mom coming to in the places that I used to come to in. I just feel like so fortunate. The pandemic was really hard on people, and I got to be there for a lot of people. And through prayer and meditation and yoga and all kinds of things that I do for my mental health, I've been in the field for a really long time. And it was you guys that believed in me. It was you guys that just totally held my hand. This is my least favorite thing to do, but it's like whenever I'm asked, I just learned how to show up. no matter what, and walk through the fear, you know? I just walk through the fear. At 10 years of that job, the chief physician in my department, his daughter was struggling, just dying of this disease, and he was sending her all over the country to get help, and then she would get out of these treatment programs, and she'd move into a mixed sober living environment, and she'd become everybody's mother, and, you know, she'd forget herself, and she could never stay sober. So he started confiding in me about what was happening with his daughter. And I had been at my job for over a decade, and I never broke my anonymity. It's on a need-to-know basis, and I felt like he really needed to know. And I started sharing about what was happening, you know, what I did at the job, and that was not really my job. My job was after, you know, because I work with a lot of newcomers. I'm just in the middle. And so we started talking about a sober living environment for ladies only. And I, you know, it was just a fantasy. It was nothing. I'm busy and I'm not looking for a job. But this one day he called me up and he's all, "Where are you? We both commute the same way to work." And I told him where I was, and he's like, "Well, I'm going by stop at this street on our way to work because I want you to see something." And I parked where he was, and it was a convent. And he's all, "I put an offer on this convent because you need to do what you do." And I'm like, "I am working. Where am I going to get the time to do this?" And he's like, "Christy, you need to do what you do." And I'm like, "Fuck, okay, sorry. But I mean, I was just like, what the hell, you know? It's like, it was just a dream. It wasn't like real. It was just, we were just talking about it, you know? And for the next 5 years, I mean, it's 16 bedrooms, 9 bathrooms, it's 7,500 square feet. And we became Craigslist favorite people. And, you know, I mean, it was way before Marketplace, you guys. It's 2007, 2008, 2009. You know, just a lot is going on. And we didn't open our doors until 2012. And, yeah, it's like the best stuff I get to do. I mean, really. I get to see myself every day. I get to remember what a gift this is to be here, to own my seat here. You know, it came out of nowhere, and it just started. I started doing staffings. I mean, I'm a psychiatric social worker. I mean, people, you know, listen when I talk to them. So at these different treatment programs, I just started getting involved in treatment programs all over the place, and to get ladies into the house, and I started doing it really differently. They have to earn their way into the house. They can't just because we have a boat, we don't, just because you have, there's a bed open doesn't mean that you're gonna get into the house. You have to call me every day while you're in treatment, some kind of treatment, and tell me what you're doing for your recovery, you know? And I only want the desperate and the willing, because those are the ones that are gonna work, you know? And just try, you know, and, you know, to this day, the house is full, and it's just filled. Every time the house transitions, the average stay is about a year and a half, when there's a big transition, it's like, I'm like, God, there's no way that this house is going to be filled with any more wonderful women than this particular group. And then every time, you guys, it's like, what the hell? I mean, it's like it just gets better and better, and they're just little fireballs, and they're everywhere. And, you know, it's just the best stuff I get to do, really. I mean, during that time, you know, I mean, in 2009, there was a mass exodus with my family. My brother-in-law got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and it was a direct result of this disease, and I started flying back and forth to Kentucky, and I chose to go three weeks after my brother-in-law passed. This one day we were, he couldn't even be around his friends. I mean, this is an electric personality. He was electric. And he had been my brother-in-law for over 30 years. And this one day, we drove these little, they had a lake house on this unincorporated area, so police couldn't get onto the property. So you could get really drunk there and be out of control, and just the way that people liked it. And we were there, and we drove down to, we were on the golf, the little golf cart, and the dogs were running behind us, and we're sitting on the lake early in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, and we're just looking at the lake, having coffee, and he's like, I wish that I would have known. And I'm like, what, Greg? And he's like, I wish that I would have known that it was going to kill me. Because if I would have known that it was going to kill me, I would have stopped so long ago. And I'm like, Greg, you made drinking and using look so fun that I had to go to 2 meetings a day when I'm visiting you in Kentucky. I mean, like, really? I mean, you know, it's like no regrets, no freaking regrets. And he said, please, please, Chris, take care of your sister because she's going to drink herself to death when I'm gone. And so I went 8 days after the funeral. And I mean, it was a big, big funeral. And people stayed for like a long time after. And I get there, and we're doing the busy work after somebody that, you know, it was just surreal that he was actually gone. And I started looking for a meeting. I had on the computer, you guys, so I had to print it out on the computer. It was 2009, so, my sister said, where are you going? And I'm going to Westport Road. There's a meeting. At 8, and she's like, do you think that will help me? And I'm like, I don't know, Shell, but it sure does help me when I'm not too sure. And so we get into the meeting, and they do this thing in Kentucky called a round robin, where they go around the entire room, and they say their name and that they're alcoholic. And if looks could kill, I'd be dead. My sister was pissed. She was so mad. She was like, oh, my God. So they get to her, and she said, my name's Michelle. And I'm undecided, right? I mean, perfect. And I got to be at meetings every single day with my sister when her name was Michelle and she was undecided. And I got to be at that meeting where she had decided. It was such a big deal. We take that for granted every day. It never dawned on me what a big deal that was, you know? To that day, to this, my sister's sober, Miss Kentucky AA everywhere, you know, and really involved. And one by one, that brother that was being arrested on a regular basis, in 2009 as well, it was just a crazy year. Right after my brother-in-law passed, my brother was on a roof in Twain Hart roofing. He was tired. He shouldn't have been up there. He was smoking non-addictive California sober marijuana, and you know, whatever. and he fell off the roof, and he never lost consciousness. But he was medevaced to Modesto Hospital, where he was intubated and in an induced coma. Oops, I'm time. I have a few more minutes. They put him in an induced coma, and it was people from the Modesto Fellowship that brought my brother a meeting every single day. They never missed a meeting. They brought him, they did big book studies, they did 12 and 12s. My brother did not want to move down here. He wanted to stay in Jamestown, and so he went to a boot camp for how to be a quadriplegic, and when he was in that boot camp for being a quad, he's like, I'm going to help a lot of people, Chris. He's all, I'm one of those people that had to be beaten into reasonableness to get my attention. He's like, I'm done, and I need to help people. And I'm like, absolutely, Billy, it'll save your life. And he got more involved with service in Alcoholics Anonymous in Jamestown and Sonora. I mean, you know, just the miracles that happen. You know, we got 501c3 status almost 2.5 years ago. We've given out over 100 scholarships for the sisterhood. I mean, you know, girls that could never afford to be there are able to afford to be there. We're 100% giving board. None of us get paid. We're all volunteers. And, you know, it's just like the biggest gift that I mean, how do you pay back a place that gave you your whole life? I mean, I'm walking it every day, you guys. I'm just, if you're new and you're counting days, welcome. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You are in for the ride of your life. So thank you so much for having me.